everybody. This is Bad Grammar, and we are here in the wonderful Bad Grammar Lair on a wonderful June afternoon, and I am lucky enough to be here with Ms. Jenny Sian. Jenny, how
are
you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank
awesome.
You.
Good to be here.
Yes. Jenny is another one that we were just talking about this. I'm really not sure where I met Jenny first. Probably it was either from the same sort of like Kate the Great's kind of post-Columbia axis where I met Claire and Patty and a bunch of other people, or the other possibility is that Jenny runs her own reading series called the Tamalehead Cafe Reading Series, I think is the formal title of
Tamalehead Cafe Presents.
Okay, Tamalehead Cafe Presents.
Pretty much.
Yes, where I have attended, it's sort of like the old Twilight Tales used to be, where there's a featured reader and then open mic immediately following, and I showed up to that a couple of times, and I was lucky enough to be featured recently, which was an awful lot of fun.
You did an awesome job.
Thanks so much. I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, and people seemed to dig it, so I was pleased. I was pleased with how that went. That was really a lot of fun. But yeah, so anyway, I have no idea if I met Jenny from Kate the Great's first or from Tamalehead first, and we have enough friends in common that at this point, really, there's no...
It just all blurs together.
There's no disentangling. Jenny, you went to Columbia?
I did. I got my bachelor's degree there in 2001.
Uh-huh.
And then went
in creative writing.
In creative writing.
Yes.
And then continued on in their MFA program. That took me a little bit longer. I officially graduated in December of 2010.
So. Okay. So, it takes a little bit to do the whole thing.
Did the coursework pretty quickly, but the thesis took me a while.
Sure.
So.
What was it for the thesis for that? I don't even know how it works. I mean, was it, because I know that you are working on a novel and have been working on it for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is the thesis the same thing as novel, or?
For me, it was, yeah.
Okay.
The thesis requirement in the MFA program there is just 200 pages of either a novel excerpt or a short story collection. I think they might also allow creative nonfiction as well.
Mm-hmm.
I did an excerpt of my novel, which I've since
continued. So it's for 200 pages. Like, what's the word count for something like that, probably?
50,000 words, maybe?
Okay. So that, yeah.
Give or take?
No, I mean, it's nothing small, but...
Yeah.
It's still a doable thing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay.
So my thesis was roughly about the first act of the story. Some people will do their entire manuscript blank and just turn in 500 page.
Yeah.
You know.
Do the whole shebang.
Yeah. Just because of the timetable that I was on, I opted not to do that. Because
right.
It took me long enough as it was just to get to that point, because I was doing it while working a full-time job.
Yeah.
Which is tricky.
Yes.
So I'm finishing it up on my own and just continue to plunk away at it.
You're just getting a little bit further. I mean, there's a little bit, because that's mostly, well, the other thing is that Jenny's been a regular at Bad Grammar. Has mostly presented stuff from the novel, I think,
mm-hmm.
Right? And, you know, every time she comes in, there seems to be a little bit more, so progress is...
It's being made.
Yeah, coming along.
It's not
along.
Very fast, but I'm moving, I feel like I'm on a good clip, and I feel like it took me a long time to get to a point where I knew where I was going, and had sort of a cohesive structure,
mm-hmm.
And so I've just been kind of trying to continue on that path and hit all the sort of beats that I have envisioned at the moment, and,
okay.
You know, adjust
sure.
And recalibrate as needed when
okay.
It hits that point.
All right. Novel is largely about professional wrestling, but sort of the local
mm-hmm.
sort of like independent version of professional wrestling.
Yep.
And would you be willing to tell us, because people that, again, have been to Lovely Bad Grammar will have heard some of this already, but for everybody else, what's the book about?
Okay, so it's set in Chicago in the mid-90s, and the main character is a girl named Julie, who has grown up in the area, and finds herself sort of at a crossroads right after she graduates high school. The path that she had planned for herself doesn't really pan out, and so she's trying to figure out something new, and reconnects with an old long-lost friend who had introduced her to wrestling when they were kids. That was their mutual love, and then he disappeared, and she's not seen him for 8 years, and so he pops back up, and turns out he's gotten involved in a local independent wrestling promotion, and introduces her to that as well, and so she kind of falls backwards into becoming sort of part of the performing group, And so the story then continues about the two of them trying to sort of navigate this strange world while also coming of age and mm-hmm. kind of getting into sort of a romantic relationship as well. So,
okay.
So it's kind of seen as like a...
I know it's about young people. I mean, is it targeted as like a YA book, or is that how you're thinking of it as you write it?
Kind of. It's some of the subject matter is a little bit more mature than your typical YA. There's some edgy stuff in there, so it could, I think, go for as a YA for older teen readers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it could appeal to adults as well.
We'll see. I know that this is like a tough question because usually, you know, I mean, yeah, I can't see really sitting down where it's anybody really sitting down. It's like, well, what are the teenagers going to like? You know, it's
right.
like really hard to, like, so yeah, so I can appreciate that. I mean, that can be like a tricky thing to nail down. It's another thing I'm curious about just because like I've, more and more, started writing stuff that like requires a little bit of research or sort of getting out of the world a little bit more. And this, I mean, definitely it's because you're a huge indie wrestling fan,
yes.
you know, and I still feel terrible for double booking that one weekend where I was going to go see Shimmer with you.
Right.
And that didn't quite Shimmer, which is the, Shimmer is one of the reasons that Berwyn is my spiritual home, as I've discussed, where Shimmer, is a wrestling promotion centered in Berwyn. And it's, Jenny, tell me if I get it wrong. It's the largest all-female professional wrestling concern in mm-hmm. the United States.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Is they okay in the world even?
Well, the promoter uses talent from all over the world.
Okay.
And his aim is to showcase the top female wrestling talent.
Okay.
And the focus. I mean, they're all attractive
yeah.
and
right.
They wear spandex, but
yes.
the emphasis is more on their athletic ability than on the way they look.
As opposed to, because, I mean, like, I'm not a huge fan, but I've seen a little bit of WWF where it's usually like so-and-so's girlfriend who they're fighting over and the
mm-hmm.
heels and stuff, and it's not really...
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, these girls, they get in the ring and they go.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing
sure.
to watch.
Yes. So, I missed that. I will see it again. It will happen.
Yes.
But anyway, Jenny, I keep meaning to get out some of the independent wrestling stuff that Jenny's very familiar with, but point is, long way around, this, like, I guess I'm sort of curious, like, when you were writing this, did you think of it as, I mean, because it's something you know a lot about already, so maybe your research wasn't that necessary, but was verisimilitude a big deal? I mean, did you feel free to be fast and loose, or did you want it to be, okay, no, this is actually how it goes?
I try to stick to some accuracy, definitely, with a lot of it. The promotion that I have in this story is completely fictional,
mm-hmm.
Did not exist during the time period that it takes place. So I'm taking some liberties in that regard, but I try to make sure I'm accurate when I'm describing moves or just kind of capturing the dynamic of sort of the way the locker room dynamics work.
Okay.
So
is that side of it something you're familiar? I mean, do you know enough people in it to...
Somewhat. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not... I wouldn't consider myself an insider, but... One of the reasons I started writing the story was I had been working on a different novel that I have since abandoned. I just didn't really have much of a plot. I was just kind of doing these sort of character explorations with the one main character, and it wasn't really going anywhere. And this was right around the time that I had started going to indie wrestling shows pretty regularly. I've been a wrestling fan since I was 6 or 7, but didn't have much knowledge of the indie scene until about 2004.
Okay.
Met a couple of girls who were working for a promotion that ran in Northwest Indiana, and actually the guy, Dave Prazak, the promoter who now runs Shimmer, had been managing the women's division in that particular company at the time,
mm-hmm.
and I had done some freelance journalism and thought it would be interesting to do a piece on them, so I arranged to do an interview and talked to about 3 or 4 of the core girls. And just hearing about their experiences and the crap that they have to deal with being women in what's essentially a man's business,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And hearing that like there really isn't a lot of opportunity for female wrestlers in America,
mm-hmm.
And
I guess that was one thing that I was thinking about when I asked like, in the United States, because I don't know if
Japan
yeah.
has huge women's wrestling scene,
whole other thing, yeah.
And,
do people go to Japan like as a way to make it? I mean, like Or is it mostly native? Like,
no, there's a lot of women who, the women who don't aim to work for WWE or TNA, usually aspire to get to Japan.
Okay.
Because it's a greatly respected sport there.
Right.
I think the money's pretty good too, if you can get booked over there.
Yeah.
So, just hearing their stories, I started thinking to myself, you know, there's really no logical, practical reason for these women to be in this line of work. You know, they get no respect, no money.
Yeah.
They have to work 3 regular jobs to support their habit of, you know, getting booked on shows on the weekends and stuff and train, and it's hard for them to get trained, but they do it anyway. And that was really interesting to me. And so I decided to take my main character from the other novel and make her an aspiring professional wrestler and just kind of explore.
Give her something to do a little bit more and give her a little more of a direction.
Mm-hmm. And so that's where it came from. I also did a little bit of research. There was, at around that same time, there was a male wrestler who offered, during one of their tournament weekends, a 3-hour seminar, just a basic skills training seminar. You didn't have to have any prior experience.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I signed up, and I tried a couple of headlocks and takedowns, and I was terrible. But
right.
It gave me a kind of a better physical understanding of what they put up with. And again, that shit hurts.
Yeah, so again, why would they...
So, yeah.
Sure.
What is it that drives someone to want to do that?
Yeah.
You know? And so just looking at that and looking at the specifically with what I've observed in indie locker rooms, just kind of the sort of the circus family dynamic,
mm-hmm.
A little bit, really fascinates me as well. You know, it's just all these people from way different, disparate
just
backgrounds.
Families of choice kind of,
yeah.
That they're really,
And looking at that and looking at, I had always kind of thought this main character of mine didn't have any sense of a strong sense of family herself, and so she's just going to find that in this world, and
mm-hmm.
that can be sort of addicting, I guess. So the story will kind of look at that as well eventually.
Okay.
So,
speaking of things that are, you know, very hard to do, that take a lot of commitment, that pay no money and have no rewards usually, how long, I mean, it sounds like if you went to Columbia, probably you go to Columbia already knowing you're going to be doing creative writing there.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of stuck with the MFA. Was it something that's, I'm always just curious to hear about this, just because I didn't do it. I never majored in creative writing anywhere. Was it, looking at colleges, was it a opportunity transformation for you, or were you always writing or always interested in writing?
I've always been interested in writing.
Yeah.
I've always kind of tinkered with stories since I'd say about third grade or so.
Mm-hmm.
And when I initially started college, I went to Marquette University for a semester before I transferred to Columbia. And my original intentions were to get into journalism, because it didn't ever occur to me that creative writing could be a vocation.
Yeah.
But then when I transferred to Columbia, was that sort of a early life crisis period.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Kind of reevaluating things. And I started off there as a film student initially, and was focusing on their screenwriting concentration, learned a lot and enjoyed the screenwriting classes that I took and some of the filmmaking, you know, basic stuff, but I wasn't really as interested in the technical aspects of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
So when I had to take a fiction writing class as part of my screenwriting concentration, that kind of pulled me away, and I just kind of fell in love with writing prose and switched my major, and I'm not sure I ever really pursued that degree thinking, oh, I'm going to make my money as a novelist. But I wanted to give it a go and at least pick up those skills that would allow me to maybe do something else involving writing as a day job, which is sort of what I'm doing right now.
Okay. What do you have to, what?
You've
only talked to me like about it peripherally, so
yeah.
I don't really know.
So I work in alumni relations and development at the University of Chicago.
Okay.
And my department focuses on major gift fundraising with parents of currently enrolled undergraduate students. So I handle, there's a lot of different things I handle, but a big component of my job is developing communications, sort of communications that market the different funding priorities that we have, and also do a little bit of scripting of the dean when he's addressing a group of parents, or prepare documents kind of summarizing who he's going to be meeting with, you know. So it's not
like speech writing, drafting letters, but lots of the same word skill kind
of
stuff.
So I kind of think of myself as a professional writer, even though it's not, you know, writing books and getting checks for that.
Okay.
So,
I mean, did you, when you were getting the job that you have right now, did they see the MFA as a, you didn't have the MFA at the time that you were doing it, but I mean,
they were definitely interested in me having a writing background, because a lot of the other people around me did not have that, and that was a kind of a void that they
It's amazing
did.
How many people really can't do it at all. Like, I mean, like, I at least, I've heard other people talk that way. I think it's easy to sort of undervalue the skill, sort of, in me thinking sort of like, oh, I have this thing that I like to do that no one would ever pay money for. But really,
people
need it and can't do it,
you
know?
They need it, and when they can't do it, they really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And they're really impressed by it, and I just think it's just something is like breathing, you know?
Right.
But I guess it's served me well. It helps me feed myself.
Okay.
Keep a roof over my head.
All right. You have a little bit of... Does the novel have a title yet?
Running the Ropes. Is the
Running the Ropes.
Working title, yeah.
Okay, so we have an excerpt from Running the Ropes.
We do.
Right here.
And
I'll just close my mouth for a second, and let's get to it.
All right, so to set this up, I already talked a little bit about Julie, the main character. And so this picks up right after she has just reconnected with Tim. She meets him in the gym of their local rec center. And he's all excited to introduce her to all the people that are now sort of his world. And so he's taking her back into the locker room area. This is right before a wrestling show is about to start, maybe about an hour. So people are getting set up. And so he takes her back there. He tells her on one condition of her being back there, if anybody asks, she's supposed to say that she's also a trained wrestler, because this is sort of an access thing. They don't really allow outsiders. So with that in mind, this is where they end up. There wasn't as much light in the locker room as there was in the gym. It took a second for my eyes to adjust, and once they did, the dank, narrow room offered a lot to take in. To my left was a wall lined with metal lockers. A long wooden bench ran alongside it, and there sat a burly older man. He sported John Lennon glasses, and his hair, black with a white stripe down the middle, gave him the appearance of a human skunk. Skunk Man sat with his knees splayed, making space for the shirtless Latino man kneeling before him. Shirtless tilted his chin up, holding his face still while Skunk Man brushed a line of black face paint along his cheekbone. To my right was a wall taken up by three toilet stalls and a pair of sinks with a wide, cracked mirror. From one of the stalls emerged a wavy-haired redhead in a cream-colored jogging suit. He clutched his waistband, squeezing the elastic to pull it tight around his hips. "Anyone got rubber bands to hold up these fucking pants?" Red asked. Skunk Man finished a brush stroke down Shirtless's nose. He grinned. "And he broke the drawstring already." He shook his head at Red's wardrobe malfunction, but handed the face paint brush to Shirtless so he could rummage through the duffel bag to his right. He produced a bottle of coconut tanning oil, a hunter green vest trimmed with gold sequins, and a pair of electric blue trunks. "No rubber bands here," he told Red, "but just a few more tweaks and your new vest is ready." It wasn't the sort of conversation I would have expected from a couple wrestlers. I hoped to continue eavesdropping, but Tim turned and tucked Blondie's note in his back pocket. Oh, that's another thing I should probably contextualize. He's going into this locker room in the first place because he's got a message from this girl who he had been arguing with earlier, and he's supposed to give it to his boss. And he's also supposed to tell him that Tito Santana, who's going to be sort of the main attraction on the show, is not going to be coming. So, believe it or not, there's such a thing as locker room etiquette. Follow my lead, okay? I nodded and fell into step behind Tim. We moved through the crowded space, stopping to shake hands with each individual. "Dude, how have you been? This is my friend Julie." Tim must have uttered that phrase at least 15 times while I smiled, nodded, and extended my hand, trying not to wince as each man took it and squeezed with a vice-like grip. It felt like being in a receiving line at a wedding. A surreal receiving line featuring colorful, half-naked greeters. There was a thick-necked African-American guy whose chest was smeared with body glitter. There was a short, rail-thin Mexican wearing knee socks, matching trunks, and a mask with rubber spikes sticking out at all angles. There was a chiseled white boy who reeked of Old Spice and whose white tights had blue racing stripes running down the legs. Following the final handshake, Tim led me to the end of the bench farthest from the door. He sat sideways and patted the space he'd left open for me. I joined him. "You okay?" he asked. "I know this scene takes some getting used to." "That's an understatement," I said. I flexed the fingers on my right hand. "Good thing I don't write with this one. That Mexican guy crushed a few bones." Tim took my hand in his and began gently massaging my knuckles. "Pablo? Ah, dude's got a little man complex. He overcompensates, especially with new people." "That feel better?" I nodded. Tim beckoned for my other hand, but then the scrape of the locker room door caused him to glance over his shoulder. A stocky guy with blonde hair curling out from under a backwards baseball cap entered. He was carrying a clipboard under one arm and a stainless steel cash box under the other. Tim returned my hand to my lap. "That's Denny. Wait here." He hopped off the bench, squeezed through a tight circle of guys, and greeted Denny with a quick handshake. The two of them wandered near the sinks, where Tim started gesticulating wildly. I strained to hear their conversation over the rest of the locker room chatter, but all I could make out were the words, "Tito," "no show," and "sorry." Denny clenched his jaw and raised his clipboard as if he was about to fling it, but when he noticed a few of the wrestlers watching, he thought twice, balanced the clipboard on the edge of the sink, and turned on the faucet. Tim stepped back while Denny splashed water on his face and started pacing the length of the mirror. A bald dude with a goatee and a leather jacket barreled through the door. He had a large duffel bag slung over one shoulder, and concern creased his brow as he muscled his way over to Denny and Tim. After another round of obligatory handshakes, Baldy said loudly, "I just saw Jinx in the parking lot. She said she's done?" Denny's blue eyes widened. "I didn't know that. Did she say why? Baldy shrugged. "I didn't stick around to ask. I thought you knew. Wanted to know what that meant for my and Moe's angle." Tim piped up. "Denny? Bob? Forgive me for interrupting. Jinx had this. She asked me to give it to you." He pulled the letter from his back pocket and handed it off. Denny unfolded the paper, and Bob stood reading over his shoulder. Denny remained calm at first, but by the time he flipped the page over, his cheeks were crimson under his patchy blonde stubble. He stepped away from the sink, shouting, "I am so fucking fucked!" and hurled his cash box through the air. It sailed over the wooden bench, scattering wrestlers and crashing against one of the closed lockers. A few more guys scurried out of Denny's path as he snatched up the electric blue trunks. He was too worked up to toss them with much fanfare, so he flung them back on the bench and slammed one of the open locker doors instead. After beating the gray metal with his fists, Denny ran out of steam. He sunk to the bench, dropping his face in his palms. Without a word, Bob reassembled the scattered innards of the cash box. He handed it to Tim, who rejoined me at the edge of the bench. Tim leaned closer to my ear. "Sorry you had to see that," he whispered. "Jinx is Katrina Jinx, the girl you saw in the gym earlier. She was supposed to debut as Bob's valet tonight, and Denny was building a big angle around it. This is the third time she's pulled her I quit card since I've been around." Tim and I glanced sideways, noting that Denny was only a few feet away. Bob waved everyone back to their business and stood watching Denny for a few moments before sitting on his left. They started speaking in low tones, but we were close enough to hear every word. "That was one hell of a tantrum," Bob said. Denny lifted his head, revealing a pained expression. "I don't know why I'm so pissed. I mean, it's not like it's the first time she's walked out." Bob scowled. "I warned you, she ain't got the heart for this business." "I know." Denny punched the locker again. "All that heat between you and Moe, right down the fucking toilet." Bob considered this for a minute and then dug a small spiral notebook out of his back pocket. We can save this feud. The Marks don't know Jinx is the mystery girl we've been referring to. Mo never gave a physical description in his promos. So this new valet of mine could be anyone. I'll call my buddy at the Admiral, see if one of his girls can fill in. Bob started thumbing through the pages in his notebook. Denny got up to retrieve his clipboard, and I assumed that the problem was solved. I poked Tim to let him know I was ready to search for stadium staff, and we got up to leave. As we passed, my arm accidentally brushed Bob's back. He turned around, staring intensely. Who are you? I panicked for a second, but then remembered what Tim had said about locker room etiquette. I stepped toward Bob and extended my arm. I'm Julie. I met everyone else before you got here. The big bald man took my hand, never breaking eye contact. Tim moved to my side. Bob, this is my oldest friend. She mostly works Iowa. He swallowed a smirk and slung an arm around my shoulder. Iowa, Tennessee, a lot of the Memphis area promoters use her. I nodded slowly, trying to keep my face composed. It was one thing to say I was a wrestler, but another thing for Tim to fabricate an entire backstory. Bob studied me carefully, awe softening his features. Memphis is a big deal. Lawler, Jarrett, they kickstarted a lot of careers down there. He nodded vigorously and pointed at my chest. Can you hang on a sec? I got an idea. Bob waved Denny over. Tim's friend here is a worker. I'd feel better bringing in someone who's trained. Can we use her? He asked. Denny scratched his stubble. I couldn't tell whether he was annoyed or suspicious. I don't know her, he said. Tim piped up. She gets huge pops in Memphis. Absolutely huge! I glared at Tim and shrugged his arm off my shoulder. Denny shook his head abruptly. I haven't seen any tapes. I don't book anyone sight unseen. You know that. I relaxed, thinking I was off the hook. But then Bob signaled to Red. Still holding his waistband, he lumbered over. They all shook hands. Mo, I need your opinion on something. Jinx is out for tonight, but this here girl might fill in. The big beatdown we discussed stays the same, but before I can pin you, she gets dragged out by your boys. I'm distracted, you gain the upper hand, but then you get cocky, and you toss me aside and lay hands on her, and I get enraged, hulk up, and save the day. Mo tucked a lock of red hair behind his ear, considering Bob's pitch. It's not that different from what we initially planned. Sounds cool. He glanced at Denny. What do you think, boss? Denny studied his clipboard. He sighed. I think the Marks are going to be pissed that we're not giving them Tito Santana, but we still need a main event. Bob's eyes lit up. So we're good then? Denny eyed me skeptically. Yeah, but you better make it fucking work. To Tim, he said, give me back my cash box. Tim complied, and Denny turned and walked out. Mo wandered over to Skunk Man, who was putting the final touches on Shirtless's face paint. Bob draped the strap of his duffel bag over my left shoulder. The weight of the rough fabric dug into my collarbone. I could tell it was going to leave a mark. Thanks so much for your help. Jinx is bigger than you on top, but she wears everything real tight. Feel free to use whatever's in the bag. He clapped me on the back. All right, I need a cigarette. I watched him go, then turned my attention to the rest of the locker room. The chiseled white boy and the sparkly-chested African-American had moved in front of the sinks, where they practiced a complicated sequence of holds, moving from headlock to armlock to leg sweep. The masked Mexican sat on the opposite end of the bench, lacing up a pair of vinyl boots. Halfway between both, Skunk Man helped Mo into his new vest. Skunk Man caught me staring, and I closed my eyes, telling myself that this had to be another dream. When I opened them, I was still in the locker room, and Tim was facing me. I wanted nothing more than to be pissed at him, but something about his crooked, sheepish grin made that absolutely impossible. He relieved me of the duffel bag and said, "Welcome to the wrestling business."
All right, Jenny, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For anybody that is interested in what Jenny is doing, well, first off, you can find out about the Tamale Hut Presents.
Mm-hmm.
www.tamalehutpresents.com? What is it?
Yeah, we have a blog. It's THC Reading Series at WordPress.com. Also, if you just Google Tamale Hut Cafe, you can get to the Tamale Hut main website, and they link to our blog on there.
Okay. And that is, all kinds of people read at that. I've read at that. Jenny is usually at that, as it is her event. There's other stuff going on. And for people that are specifically interested in what you're up to, I know you're on Facebook. Other than that,
I'm on Facebook. I have a live journal that I update sporadically.
Right.
It's seabird78.livejournal.com. I also have a Twitter, Rassle Writer, RASSLE Writer. I tend to try to do sort of novel progress updates on there, or kind of running commentary when I go to shows, things like that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming by, Jenny. And I hope I'll be seeing you. Well, I know at the very next Bad Grammar as we do this.
Yes.
But this is probably going to come out a few months from now. So generally speaking, I hope to be seeing you at the Bad Grammar's coming up.
Indeed.
All right. Thank you again.
Bad Grammar is released according to a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported License. You can get the new Bad Grammar at iTunes and in the listen section of Brendan Dessner Online the first week of every month. If you'd like to support Bad Grammar, thank you very much. We're good, but we would encourage you, if you're feeling generous, to go ahead and check out www.protect.org to learn more about a cause that we wholeheartedly support. Our theme music is lovingly provided to us by The Gotsicles. You can find out more about The Gotsicles over at www.gotsicles.com. And that is it. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you here next month.